Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. It's time for our concert roundtable. We try to do it every 6 weeks. I think it's fair to say it is one of our favorite times. Is that not true, Marjorie?
Absolutely.
Here with us in Studio 3 are our regulars on this front. Rob Hochschild. He's with Berklee College of Music. Hey there, Rob.
Hey. Thanks for having me.
Brian McCreath is a host with 99.5 WCRB and a producer for the Boston Symphony Orchestra radio broadcast. Hello there, Brian.
Hey, how you doing, Jim?
Did you beat Keith Lockhart in that quiz? I can't remember. You lost the Lockhart.
I took him down.
Oh, you took him down.
I did.
And Edgar B. Irwick, the third with WGBH's Curiosity Desk. Hey there, Edgar.
Hey, happy to be out from under the desk and here in the studio.
It is
terrible. Good to see you all.
When they make you stay underneath your desk.
I know. It's almost inhuman, but what can you do?
Outrageous.
Happy to have a job.
Okay. Well, we'll start with you, Edgar B. Hoary the third, okay?
Oh, goodness. I got to start it off.
Yeah. Let's start with you.
All right. Well, the first concert I'm going to talk about is the one that's coming up the soonest. And this is a group, a fairly new group. They have a couple records out, and they're called Typhoon. There's a couple things that are interesting about these guys, not the least of which is that they're an 11-piece rock band.
Wow.
So there's 11 people on tour in one giant van together. So
wow, that's a big van.
You can just imagine what's the madness that is going on their tour. But they're really good. They're really interesting in part because the guy behind the whole thing is a guy named Kyle Morton. He's from Oregon. And when he was younger, he had this like terrible attack of Lyme's disease. And he almost died. He had like multiple organ failure and all this kind of stuff.
Oh.
And this new record that they have out is kind of him on some level working through all of this kind of mortality stuff that he sort of dealt with when he was younger. And what's interesting about it is it's not a down in the mouth record. It's like this big sounding record. Live, they are unbelievable. We're going to hear a little bit of a track from their new record. This is a song called Dreams of Cannibalism.
Smiles all around in the studio, Edgar, I should say.
So they are playing two shows at the Sinclair. This is on Saturday and Sunday, the 22nd and 23rd of this month. I think the first one is already sold out. So, I mean, they've got a pretty big following. And I should say this is a little bit of a plug for our own stuff, but WGBH Music has a great YouTube channel with a lot of classical music stuff on it, increasingly some of this rock and roll stuff. And we went out and filmed them when they were last in town. We have some interviews with the band and some concert footage that is unbelievable. Really give you a sense of like what they're like live.
Hey, Edgar, are more bands using horns now?
Yes, absolutely. It is a very clear movement. It's happening all the time.
By the way, for those who are driving and are anxious already, that they can't write this stuff down quickly enough and you don't want to write while you're driving, every one of these recommendations, when they're playing, who they are, et cetera, will be on our website, wgbhnews.org. Excellent start, Edgar. Rob, as we say, the bar is really high.
Well, I'm going to see what I can do here. We're going to start out with a trumpet player by the name of Dave Douglas, composer, band leader. This is a guy who grew up around New York City, went to Berklee and New England Conservatory. He's one of these jazz artists who is constantly reinventing himself. He's always got a new band, a new project, a new inspiration from this cultural thing or that. His allmusic.com entry has him in something like 12 different bands at the same time. What he's got cooking in April is a quartet called Riverside, which is a tribute to another forward-thinking jazz musician by the name of Jimmy Giuffre, a clarinet and saxophone player. So in this upcoming show, among other things, it'll fuse jazz with bluegrass and Appalachian music, sacred hymns. So I think that's going to be a really great show at Regatta Bar. What we've got today, because that group hasn't recorded, is something from a Dave Douglas album from about 10 years ago. It's called Keystone. This is one of these things that's an example of how he gets inspired by unexpected sources. Fatty Arbuckle, the silent film star, who was very controversial for being arrested and then acquitted for rape and murder. Dave Douglas wanted to set out and sort of help exonerate Fatty Arbuckle. So here's a tune from an album. This song is called Just Another Murder.
Thank you.
okay with it now? So he's a great trumpet player. Here's the solo underneath this. And, you know, on this tune, you also hear a Wurlitzer piano, and a DJ comes in and out of time. So he's really not relying on traditional jazz instrumentation. It's really cool stuff from Dave Douglas. It's Regatta Bar, April 17th.
They do a lot of great live stuff at the Regatta Bar. I mean, that's sort of the... Is that the premier place in the Boston area to see?
I don't know if I want to go on the record saying that.
It's a wonderful place. Your favorite?
Yeah. It's a really nice intimate room. The sound is always really nice there. It's sort of a classic small jazz club where you have that nice intimate experience. I love it.
Okay. You can't go wrong, that's for sure.
We know you crushed Keith Lockhart in the quiz. Let's see how you do with Rob and Edgar.
Yeah, seriously, the bar is high once
again. Take it away.
I'm going to tell you a story. So when I was an aspiring musician, I was going around auditioning at music schools. And at one point, I was in another city auditioning at another conservatory, having already been accepted at the New England Conservatory. I told the person I was auditioning for, before I played one note, that... She said, where are you thinking of going to school? And I said, well, I've been accepted in Boston. She said, well, you should stop there. You should just go there. It totally freaked me out, and I tanked the audition. It was an embarrassment. But she said, you want to go to Boston because if you want to be around orchestras, more great orchestras are going to come through Boston than almost any other city besides New York. She was right, and that's what's coming up in just a couple of weeks. Two major orchestras coming to Boston in 1 week, the Israel Philharmonic with Zubin Mehta conducting Bruckner. All right, so that's great. And then the Los Angeles Philharmonic with Gustavo Dudamel doing what I think is a fantastically imaginative pairing of two symphonies. One is the Tchaikovsky Fifth Symphony. It's standard rep. It's big. It's orchestral. It's just a big honkin' orchestra piece, right? Really fun, beautiful, majestic. The first half of the program is John Corigliano, American composer, wrote the soundtrack to Clockwork Orange. And he wrote a piece in 1990, his Symphony No. 1, of Rage and Remembrance. And let's listen to a little bit of it right here, and then I'll kind of explain it to you. Let's listen to some of this Corigliano. They're sort of floating. This is the remembrance part. Corigliano wrote this in honor of some friends of his who had died of AIDS. And you remember, 1990, we were in the thick of unknowing. Now listen. He drops in this offstage piano playing a tango.
So that sound of it being really far away is intentional. That's the sound if
when you hear this in Symphony Hall,
live.
You're going to hear this from offstage.
That's so cool.
This amazing, dreamy... nostalgic, this is what memory sounds like, right? So it's an amazing symphony. It won a Pulitzer Prize. I've played this piece, actually, and it really is a very powerful piece. So what I love about this program is it has this amazing American piece, but it's paired with Tchaikovsky, who himself struggled with his homosexuality, and the Fifth Symphony is sort of one of his attempts to sort of come to terms and triumph over it, though he never really did. And so you have these two things together, living on the stage at the same time with one of the world's great orchestras and kind of one of the hottest conductors around, too, Gustavo Dudamel. So that's with Celebrity Series. They're presenting both L.A. Phil and Israel Phil in the space of 1 week at Symphony Hall.
Fantastic. Wow.
Good stuff.
Now, can I tell you, my review of round one is this, Marjorie. See if you agree. All three musical choices were excellent, but I would say Brian loved his music.
He loved
more
it.
Than Rob and Edgar love theirs. I don't know if that's a challenge. That's a fair
job. What happens to me is every time we do this, I think, why did we bring the classical guy? Because he always has this like this story about how it's like a, you know, it took 400 years for this piece to come together, and it's dealing with seven different eras at one time, and somebody has some geniusly like amalgamated it all into this single note, and they're going to play, you know, and then I'm like, well, here's a guy who's a really good guitar player. Yeah, I should listen to him. You know what I mean? It's just
totally
not, it's
not
a level
it's
playing
true.
Field.
That's a good point. You know, I got to ask you, Brian, before
I
move back to Edgar B. Hewitt III, about Anders Nelson's the new conductor of the BSO.
Man, that was a smoking hot Salome last Thursday night.
It was smoking hot Salome.
Oh my gosh, it was. You can even listen to it online at our website, I should say, classicalwcrb.org. One night, Richard Strauss' Salome, one of the all-time most twisted operas, a psychosexual, gruesome murder.
See, this is
intrigue.
What I'm talking about.
Psychosexual.
This is what I'm talking
the sound
about.
Of memory. We can't keep up with
I'm
this.
I'm telling you, man. And Andres was on fire.
Really?
I mean, that was
So it's a great choice. for the BSA?
I believe it is. I think that there's all kinds of ways things can go off the rails, but I think the BSO has made an amazing choice for their music director. I'm very much looking forward to what comes next.
Okay, so here's the deal. Well, you have to be a little shorter on the bios because we want to get as much music in. If I were you, Edgar, I'd just make stuff up. Psychosexual, do whatever you can.
Just going to start making things up.
Make it short. Go ahead.
Well, this one, Jim, you're going to like this one because this is a band from Philadelphia.
Oh, yes.
And I know you're a Philadelphia guy. So this is a band called War on Drugs, which if you we'll listen to the music, and I'm sure everyone will agree it's a tongue-in-cheek reference because it sounds like they are highly on drugs. but they're great. They're involved. They've been around for a few years, and there's a guy named Kurt Vile, who I think we've listened to here before, and he was involved with them in the early years and then split off. But they've really kind of coalesced with this sound that is kind of part, you know, Bruce Springsteen, part Bob Dylan, but then also part Dire Straits and a lot of the sounds of the 80s, and then they throw a whole bunch of reverb on it, and it all sounds really good. So they've got a new record out, which is not quite officially released yet, but actually if you go to NPR's website, NPR Music, you can do the streaming before it comes out. And here's a track from that record. They're going to be here April 17th at the Paradise. This is a track from the new record, not quite out yet. It's called Red Eyes.
Does have an 85.
Yeah.
Totally.
And they embrace it.
I love the singer.
Yeah.
Great
it's good. Like I said, a lot of reverb. It's big, high energy. They go on, you know, when you see them live, they go into sort of some extended jamming, quote unquote jamming, but they pump it up. They make it big, huge energy. It's going to be a really fun show.
Unfortunately, Edgar doesn't have time to say that the grandfather, I think his great grandfather of the singer, cured dysentery. Are you aware of that? Brian, you probably knew
Jim.
That.
Jim,
sure, Jim. Okay. That was in my back pocket.
Brian Hoshiel, what do you got? What's up,
Rob?
Next? Rob, I'm sorry.
Close enough. We're
Brian
good.
McCreath,
we're good.
Rob Hoshiel.
I will not get into the family tree of this next artist. It's Eliane Elias. She's a Brazilian pianist. Her latest album is a tribute to Chet Baker. Everybody knows who Chet Baker is.
Yeah.
The guy who was a big part of the West Coast sound, trumpet player with that thin, very transfixing voice.
And speaking of drugs.
Yeah, exactly. There's serious issues for him. I don't think Eliane's paying tribute in that particular way. But what she's doing is she believes, coming from Brazil, that actually Chet Baker influenced the bossa nova legends like João Gilberto. Mm. So she's kind of turning around that whole idea that it went the other way around. So what we've got here is a track from this new record. It's called There Will Never Be Another You. She's a piano player and a vocalist, by the way. Great piano player. Some say not as good a vocalist. We can all sort of listen for ourselves here in a second and see what we think.
I've never been in love before. Now all at
nice.
Once it's you. It's you forevermore.
And she can just fill in with her own little piano.
Yeah, it's nice.
That is a Chet Baker vibe, isn't it?
Totally.
It's just cool. It's laid back.
Yeah. So this is a really nice sound on this record, and she's playing at Scullers Jazz Club, which is also a very nice jazz club.
Also very nice. Forgot about Scullers. Oh, you're right.
Also the premier jazz club.
Also the premier, along with all the other premier jazz clubs.
A great view of the river.
That's April 11th and 12th, and I think that's going to be a really nice night over there.
That is really sexy music.
I think she sounds, what's the matter with her voice?
I don't know. She was such a great piano player that when she first came out after 15 years of only instrumental, people just were ready to jump on her for doing that, you know. But I think
it's right. It's the exact right vibe for the music. I mean, that's
great.
Perfect.
Okay, Brian McCreath, take it away.
Okay, so I'm gonna dispense with the bio and all that, Jim, as you instruct, and we're going to go straight to the music because the music speaks for itself right here. That's a motet by J.S. Bach. I know, I sound like a broken record because I mention Bach every time we do this, but there's so much great
Never
Bach.
Never mention him enough.
Well, there's two great events with Bach coming up. Okay, so this is what you're hearing
Bach
here.
Bach is going to be here?
If only that would be a great interview. This is so Harry Christophers and the Handel and Haydn Society are doing a program this coming weekend in which Bach motets are interspersed with sacred music by William Byrd, an English Renaissance or English Elizabethan composer, and there's all kinds of great interplay between these two composers. Lots of similarities, but lots of difference too. It's that great moment when when a conversation between two types of music really generates some new things about each one. That's one of the Bach events. The other one is a Bach birthday celebration coming up on March 22nd. Bach turns 329 on March 21st. I know, that guy. I tell you, he's got staying power. And and so it's an all-day thing at First Lutheran Church in the Back Bay. They've got one of the best of the authentic North German-style organs that Bach played in that church. And there's an all-day event going on there where there's guest organists, and I'm actually participating with a little bit of an interview. And the Schola Cantorum of Boston will be singing this music, just as Handel and Haydn Society is. So that's a free thing that you can just like show up at any time of the day. One particular moment in that day will involve a performance for children of I don't even know how this is going to work. Somehow there's going to be an organ accompaniment with music by Bach to the 1921 Buster Keaton movie. What's it called?
Bach Meets Buster?
Bach Meets Buster. That is the performance. And so anyway, it's a good thing to check out and celebrate Bach.
It was incredible. 329 years later.
The boat. The boat. Thank you.
Oh,
hey,
I'm sorry.
Edgar, can I ask you to go out of order only because I see on your list that somebody who I loved 70 years ago. Can you do that? And if we have time, we'll get back.
No,
okay.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Totally will. And there's a reason why I wanted to talk about this. So this is a couple months out, but May 15th, TD Garden. The legendary Mr. Barry Gibb will be in town.
Yes.
Of course, we all know Barry Gibb is one of the brothers Gibb.
Is he interviewing Bach?
And he will be interviewing Bach. No, one of the Bee Gees. But so I saw this and I'm like, this, you know, Barry Gibb's going to be kind of at the TD Garden, whatever. So I started looking at this because I actually really like the Bee Gees a lot.
Oh, I love the Bee Gees.
And one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this concert up is because he's doing this tour, which is called the Mythology Tour, which he's done basically in Europe so far. He hasn't done it in America yet. And in fact, that May 15th date here in Boston is the first U.S. date for this tour. It's the first time he's ever toured solo. Of course, he's lost a few of his brothers and a lot of the, you know, other members of the Bee Gees. And it's playing off of this record box set that came out, which is called Mythology, which is their entire career. And he's playing music from the entire Bee Gees career. And I think the thing that a lot of people don't know is that before the Stayin' Alive soundtrack, the Bee Gees had about seven records out, right? So all through the 60s and the early 70s, they were making music that was everything from really quiet and melancholy to these beautiful folk orchestral pieces. You hear Shades of the Kinks. You hear Shades of David Bowie. I mean, they have a huge, what's that word, oeuvre or whatever, of music, right? Like, and so I wanted to play a Bee Gees song here, which is one that I think maybe a lot of people haven't heard. This is from one of their early records called Bee Gees First. This is a tune called New York Mine Disaster, 1941. This has been on a few of the set lists in his recent tour. Let's hear a little bit of it.
I keep straining my ears to hear a sound. Maybe someone is digging underground. Or have they given up and all gone home to bed?
They took a listen to Eleanor Rigby, didn't they?
Right.
It must be dead. Have you seen my wife, Mr. Jones?
And you would, you know, to the casual listener who kind of knows the Bee Gees from Stayin' Alive and, you know, all of that, you would never guess that this is the Bee Gees. And yet it is. And he's still doing all of the great disco era hits and stuff during the concert,
Stayin'
too.
Forget Stayin' Alive. So. Saturday Night Fever is one of the great music movies of another generation. One of
totally.
The great.
You know
what I
can absolutely true
get
too.
Over, though? The Bee Gees. I mean, listen. They sound a little bit like the Munchkins. Do they not?
Well, yeah.
There's a little of that.
There is a little, because they have those high voices. Yeah. And like anybody knows, like when a family starts singing together, it sort of pushes everybody a little bit louder and a little bit higher than they normally would be.
The Wizard of Oz.
Who's the one who had his hand on his ear? Was that Barry? You know, who's the one that put his hand, cupped his ear?
Robin.
Thank you, John.
Barry's the one with the nice beard. The nicest beard was Barry.
Best
He's also the one who did the stuff with Barbara Streisand, I think, too, right?
So to speak, the stuff with Barbara Streisand. Now, Rob, can I impose on you the same way I imposed on him?
Oh, you're really dictating the order today.
Could you skip one and go to it? Because this is a local woman.
Yes, this is a local woman. Her name is Grace Kelly, not to be confused with the former Princess of Monaco. She grew up, I believe, in Newton. An alto saxophone player. Her first record came out when she was 12 years old.
She is unbelievable.
So, yeah, she is just, and was like pretty much a serious artist right from the get-go. So there's no denying that she can really play. She can write music. She did wind up going to Berklee, but this is the kind of person who came to music college with a lot in the toolbox already. So what she's doing, she's playing Scullers with her latest sort of iteration of her band. The thing that she's added to her repertoire of playing the saxophone is singing. She writes songs now, and she sings. She's got a very nice voice, too, as well. What we're going to hear is something from a record that came out a few years ago where she is playing the saxophone mostly. This is a record she did with Phil Woods, title track. It's called Man with a Hat. She was about 18 when I gave this.
You know what's also unbelievable when you see her, I've seen her a few times at events, is she puts down the sax and starts singing. And when you see someone playing a sax, you say to yourself, wait a second, I heard she sings, but you can't possibly be putting down the sax. And it is amazing. She is amazing.
And you know, you see these pictures
woman.
Of her all over the place. I used to see them in Brookline when she was
much younger
than
that. Our family
owns
that gift store on Beacon Street.
And you say, this kid, she looks like she was about 9 when
she's
she first
fabulous.
Started.
Still, and she's still young, and you see her live. The other thing that's rest is she's slight, you know, she's not, you know, and she's growling on this, like, saxophone. And she's this, like, you know, young, you know, slight woman just kind of up there on stage, and she's killing it. It's awesome.
She's unbelievable.
She is unbelievable.
Not even 22.
Okay, wow. Brian, we're really short on time. What do you have
okay,
for us?
Okay, so I'm not going to talk about one concert. I'm talking about a sort of an ongoing thing called Group Muse. So let's just play a little music here to get started. We imagine ourselves in a concert hall. Perhaps a palace, even.
Look at Margaret.
A ballroom.
Look how happy she is, Brian.
Or perhaps we imagine ourselves on a living room couch with some wine and a dog wandering around, and maybe a kid crawling across the floor, a part of a house party. That's the vibe you get with Group Muse. And this is the music that kind of turned on this fellow Sam Bodkin to start this whole thing. It's basically a social network built around house chamber music parties. As he puts it, the whole idea is to bring together people who love chamber music with people who have living rooms. That's the basic idea.
Wait a minute. So the chamber music players actually go with their violins and cellos and whatever?
Yeah, people volunteer to
Marjorie,
come around.
Marjorie, ask him how much it costs.
How much does it cost?
It's free. That's right. That's right. You just sign up on Group Muse and you're like, he's got a really nicely put together website where you reserve your spot. There's a sort of maximum for each one. People sign up to host them. People sign up to play for them. People sign up to just bring a bottle of wine to them. So it's just a fun social network that takes chamber music into the place where kind of a lot of it was meant to be in the first place. Just hanging around in a living room, enjoying great
music. And one of the best things about it, I've been talking with Sam because we're trying to do a piece for WGBH about him in Group Muse, and the majority of the things that he's doing, that he's throwing, happen, and it's mostly kids in their 20s.
Yeah.
Some people in their early 30s, they're showing up 60, 70 people at a house party. They're having some beers, meeting each other, then they sit down for a while and listen to some chamber music. And then as he says it, it's great because you go to a party, and you know, you go to a party, you don't really know what to talk about, but now you've all experienced this music, and now he says right after the music stops, everybody's talking with each other, girls and guys are meeting. It's just like,
and Sam is not a musician. Sam studied something like political science at Columbia and just kind of fell in love with chamber music through this piece by Beethoven. This is called the Grosse Fuge. And it's just something that caught his ear. He loved it, and he loves the way people come together around it. So it's called Group Muse. You can just go sign up, show up at a house, dig it.
By the way, I didn't say this. Barry Gibb is coming to my house. The afternoon, I didn't want to tell people because I didn't want to be overcrowded. It's the same sort of deal.
Do we have time to squeeze in one more?
No, we don't have time for more music. But quickly, we'll go around one more time really quickly. There's one more on each of your lists, I think. What else do you have
for us? Yeah, I'm just going to mention a local guitarist who is unbelievable. His name is Lyle Brewer. And you know what? Next time we do this, we'll talk more about it. He's got a standing gig right now. Saturdays at Atwood's in Cambridge in the afternoon. Saturday afternoons 4 to 7. I'll talk about him more next time. He's terrific.
How about Rob? What else you got?
Jason Moran is doing something called the Fats Waller Dance Party. He's trying to get people who love jazz to get up off their butts and dance to the live music. So that's the Berkeley Performance Center on April 4th.
You want to add one more, Brian?
Yeah. So the news is all about Andres Nelson's to the BSO, but for these 2 weeks, the news is about Yefim Bronfman, the great pianist, playing all 5 Beethoven piano concertos and the triple concerto in the space of just 2 weeks. It's kind of an awesome achievement.
All 5?
All 5 of them.
Wow.
The deep dive, we call it.
You three are great, by the way. This is so terrific. Thank you all.
It was wonderful. Thank you very much. Brian McCreath, host of 99.5 WCRB, also producer for the Boston Symphony Orchestra radio broadcast. Rob Hochschild is with the Berklee College of Music. And Edgar B. Hurry III runs the WGBH Curiosity Desk. Thanks again, you guys,
for being here.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. Tune in tomorrow. Ask the Governor, Deval Patrick, is here for an hour, taking our questions and yours and the Globe's. Alex Beam is here as well for Open Mic. Our show's production from WGBH. I'm Marjorie Egan.
And I'm Jim Browning.
Thanks for tuning in.